Hey everyone, welcome to Bitchin' About Broadway, where we talk about Broadway behind her back. I'm your bitchin' host, Elijah Zurich, and today we have a little something different. We're gonna mix it up. It's gonna be out of the norm, just like the show we're talking about. This is one of my very best friends in the whole wide world. I adore her so much. Sophia McGregor, what's good?
Hey, what's good?
Period, Greggy. Okay, so Greggy, you actually introduced me to the show, and it's now one of my top three favorite shows, and I love it with all of my heart. We're going to be talking about Falsettos.
Top three? That's an honor. Yeah, I love Falsettos. It is my favorite show ever. I actually run a TikTok account in which I analyze all of it, and I've written so many essays just going through and like looking through the whole thing, because the writing in it is like my favorite thing ever.
And Sophia, you have done theater, that's where we met, but you come from a different background, so tell us a little bit about that.
So I'm a slam poet. I do competitive slam poetry, and I write for different literary magazines. I'm basically like a freelance writer, and I really love Falsettos, not just because of the music and the acting, but because I think the writing is a literary masterpiece.
It is. It really is. Every time I watch it, I find something new. Like, even, and I have a lot of friends I talk about it with, because it's like, I'm like the Elder Price from Book of Mormon. It's like the, hello, my name is Elder Price, but like for Falsettos.
Yeah.
I'm like, have you read about our Lord and Savior, William Penn?
I'll be hanging out with my friends and they're like, don't say the F word and it's Falsettos, because if they mention it, I'll go off on it.
I know. I've like hung up on you before and you just keep calling me. Oh, and I'm sorry if there's any exterior noise. I am driving back from rehearsal. So I live a very busy life. I didn't have any other time to do this, so bear with me.
I'm so Elijah sorry. World Tour.
So, Greggy, you're one of the funniest people I know, and that's why I'm just so excited to have you. You're just, wow. We talk all the time. I spent my quarantine with Greggy, not like in the house, but she was always on the phone, and she was on the phone for about like 8 hours a day, every day.
Yup. I'm like your narrator. Like, you'll do something and I'll be like, Elijah has done this.
She knows way too much about me. Like, she has a lot of dirt, and I have a lot of dirt on you too, which we're not going to talk about. So anyways, we're going to kick off this episode with a little ditty. So Greggy, what song should we start off with?
Ooh, I think a really good, like, introduction to the show is This Has Better Come to a Stop.
Oh, period. So, Greggy, do you want to, like, end our station? Like, for the moment, do you want to just, like, end it for us? I want to give you the honor.
Okay. Elijah and Sophia signing off.
Period. We'll be back. To this, it's amazing. And this is the revival cast of Falsettos, and this is what got me into Falsettos. This pro shot is on Broadway HD, and I absolutely love it. Everyone should watch it. Bye, catch you on the flip-flop.
Late for dinner, late again, late for dinner, late again, late for dinner, late again, late for dinner, late, 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 late for dinner, late again, late for dinner, late again, late for dinner, late again, late for dinner, late, 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 late.
Wizards supposed to always be here, making dinner, set to screw. That's what pretty boys should do. Check their hairlines, make the dinner, and love me. This is going nowhere and fast, wizard. This little thing that we have will not last. Don't feel responsible, after all it's through.
I'm not responsible.
Life can be wonderful, isn't this wonderful? And this had better come to a stop, wizard. Now, wizard, chow, wizard, Ben. It better come to an end.
I was supposed to make the dinner, make it pretty on his plate. Every wife should pull her weight, have it ready, make it tasty and love him.
This had better come to a stop, doctor. This has been a tragic and horrible flop.
Don't feel responsible, after all it's through.
Who is responsible?
Don't ask me questions, I'm frightened of questions, but grateful that it's come to a stop. Trina, smile, Trina, I'll help you mend.
I met this man today. He wasn't very smart, but he was rich. Marvin, which Marvin? Do you prefer I lust for brains or money?
Brains, I'm me, please, or break my heart.
This is all very neat.
This is all very neat.
This is all very smart.
This is all very neat. This is all very smart. And this had better come to a stop. Mendel, don't touch me. Don't condescend. This had better come. This had better come to a this. This had better come to an end. This had better come to an end.
Chop, 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 chop. I chopped it. I served his food. The asshole forced me.
Chop, 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 chop.
And still the bastard divorced me.
Chop, 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 chop,
late for dinner, late again. Late for dinner, late again. Late for dinner, late again. Late for dinner, late again.
Late for dinner,
late again. Late for dinner, late again. This had better come to a stop. Marvin, this has been a lousy but fabulous plot.
Why is it always ourselves who have to change?
This is incredibly boring.
You've got a temper that redefines temper. And this had better come to a stop. Marvin, why? Marvin, try. Marvin, bend. This had better come. This had better come to a this. This had better come to an end.
This had better come to an end.
This had better come to an end.
Okay, period.
Hey, mamas.
Okay, cool. So, welcome back to Bitchin' About Broadway on Hawk Radio, Anchor FM. I'm your bitchin' host, Elijah Zurich, and today we have a special guest, Sophia McGregor, but we call her Greggy. The song we just heard was This Had Better Come to a Stop from Falsettos, the revival cast, and I absolutely stan it. It's amazing. Sophia, do you have a quick analysis of this song? I know you dive into it all. Anything you would like to say?
Oh, yes. So this song actually brings out one of the key metaphors in the show, and that is that dinner represents femininity, and its counterpart, chess, represents masculinity. But dinner represents femininity, and you'll kind of see how Marvin is almost like forcing Wizard to be the woman in the relationship. If you didn't know, Marvin and Wizard are gay lovers, and
as they should be.
Marvin has a lot of internalized homophobia, so he's like, Wizard, you need to be the woman in this relationship. Woman. And so Wizard's like,
then he should have stayed in his marriage.
Yeah, literally. I'm like, you got a girly right there. But anyways,
you got Stephanie J. Block, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. I will have you know, Stephanie J. Block is hottie.
Stephanie J.
My drama teacher is obsessed with her.
Absolute milf.
He saw her in Wicked on the first national tour. She played Elphaba. She actually originated the role of Elphaba, but we're not going to talk about that today.
We're going to get sued by Idina.
So, I know Idina is going to, like, roll up here. Adele Dazeem is going to roll into the chat. We love her, too. We love her, too. We're not shading Idina. We're not shading my girl Elsa. However, Stevie J. Block, he saw her in Wicked on the first national tour in Tampa, and he absolutely loved her, and he's been in love with her since 2003.
She's the best. But anyways, so within the metaphor, you'll notice, like, they're all, like, late for dinner, late again, and that's a representation of how Wizard can't actually make the dinner on time because he's not a woman, and Marvin is just a manipulative person.
I mean, period. Okay, so, period. We're going to go off with some little... Ugh. Guys, I cannot speak. Anyways, we're going to go off with some little notes about Falsettos and, like, the originality of it. So, Falsettos, the musical, opened on Broadway on April 1992 at the John Golden Theater. It ran just over a year and closed June 1993. Guys, Disney movies were released in that amount of time. Anyway, this is a quote from 13.org website states, the musical comedy Falsettos arrived on Broadway to poke fun at neurotic New Yorkers, unpack an adolescent's reaction to his gay father's and straight mother's divorce, and raise the spectator, raise the specter epidemic of AIDS. And also, it's not stated in my notes, however, they actually start, both acts of the musical started off as their own separate musicals. So the first one was March of the Falsettos, and the second act was Falsettoland. But then they were
canceled. I think this is really important to know, like, when you're actually analyzing the musical, because March of the Falsettos was written before Will Being Thin knew that he wanted to do a sequel. Like, he wrote March of the Falsettos, and he was like, period. And then AIDS happened, and he was like, ooh, I want to continue this one.
I want to make my fans
depressed. I'm going to ruin all of your days.
Guys, he ruined my life. It's not Mean Girls. It's like, Regina George ruined my life. She's a blood-sucking road whore. Anyway, William Penn ruined my life. He's a blood-sucking road whore. Anyway, it's depressing, but I like that it says it's a comedy.
It's a dramedy. It's a dramedy. That's just guys, you. That's just the call
it's
with
a
you.
It's a dramedy. Guys, my life is a dramedy. Me and my mom were talking about it the other day, and I was like, it's a soap opera. She was like, nah, it's a dramedy.
The soap opera is so only when you're in the shower.
In 1990...
Oh, I can't. That's so funny. You went, like you were on a zing.
I'm done with the... please log
I'll
off.
Go. No, I'll leave.
In 1992, Miss Girl... Miss Girl, let
you'll
me
miss
my
me.
Note.
They always do.
Okay.
Are your batteries recharged?
In 19. No, it's not. In 1992, the production received 7 Tony Award nominations and 2 wins: Best Book of a Musical and Best Original Score Written for the Theater. Guys, the score is so original. There's nothing that sounds like it.
Yeah.
So, now I've got some notes on the revival, because he came back from the dead. Wizard had more to say. The revival, it's like that meme of the lady, like, licking the envelope, like, when he blocks you, but you have more to say, and she's, like, licking the envelope sultrily. Anyways, the revival ran from September 2016 to January 2017. Not nearly enough time at the Walter Deneer Theater. The revival was nominated for 5 Tony Awards, but had no wins.
Boom! They were robbed.
Literally, they were robbed, but...
They were so robbed.
The big wins of that year were Hello, Dolly! Revival, because, you know, the category was for the revival, and, of course, like, Bette Midler, star-studded cast with, like, Gavin Creel and her and my dance teacher Sarah Neill.
Oh, no wonder you like it.
Guys, Sarah Neill's an
this
icon,
is a
okay?
Sarah Neill stand podcast.
It is. Guys, I'm in love with Sarah Neill. Don't out me. The big wins that year were Hello Dolly and Dear Evan Hansen for Best Original Musical, which is why Come From Away didn't win. Come From Away also deserves a win. And one of my favorite videos on this planet is the dinner party interview of the Stephanie J. Block, Brendon Urantowicz, Christian Borle, and Andrew Reynolds from Falsettos, and Jen Colella from Come From Away discussing their shows and Broadway. And oh my gosh, both of their shows.
The most ambitious crossover since Elijah met Christy Elsmore. There.
Oh, I'm done with you. Guys, Christy Altamare is my girl. And if you haven't listened to it, listen to her new album. It's fantastic. She writes music and she's got a beautiful voice. Like, she's got one of my favorite voices on this planet. That woman is fantastic. I am in love with her. She could spill hot coffee on my head and I'd apologize. Yeah, I love that video. Jen Colella... is amazing. She was Beverly Bass in Come From Away, and if you have any more questions about Come From Away, Megan and I actually did a segment on Come From Away, so go back and listen to that. The show is fantastic, just like Falsettos, like the writing. We got really in depth with that, and if you don't know about it, go listen to it. It's beautiful, tear-jerking score. So anyways, Today, you can see the revival cast of Falsettos on Pro Shot now on Broadway HD, like I stated earlier. And I've heard that that Come From Away is coming to be a Pro Shot as well. So I'm so excited I get to watch both. So now it is our second station break, and we will be listening to another song. This is Games I Play from Falsettos, sung by Andrew Reynolds and the revival cast. This is like my go-to audition
Andy
song.
Randy has done it again.
Andy Randy is it, guys. I love Andy Randy. He's such a scandalous man. Like, there's never a dull moment of Andy Randy. We call him Andy Randy for reasons that I will say when we come back. Guys, that's the real Bobby T. But Andrew Reynolds is his actual name. Andrew Reynolds. We love Andrew Reynolds. This is Games I Play from Falsettos. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. Greggy, I'll see you
next. Bye, bestie. Mwah.
I don't look for trouble. I do not accept blame. I have a good and a bad side, but they're one and the same. Ask me to arouse you, I will rise and obey. These are the games I play. I screw every morning, then bathe and drink tea. I've been playing canasta disastrously. All my recreation seems to suit me okay. These are the games I play. It's tough with love. Love's tough to show. Let me face the music. It's a song that I was waiting to hear so long, so long ago. I bet on the horses. I die by degree. I am sure his divorce is a tribute to me. Ask me if I love him. It depends on the day. These are the games I play. It's tough, my friend. Love's looking strong. Play again the music. It's a song that I've been waiting to hear for much too long. Years, years too hurts not to love him. It hurts when love fades. It's hard when part of him is off playing family charades. Ask me if I need him. Get him out of my way. These are the games. These are the games. These are the
games have been played.
Oh, the games have been played. I was crying. let's be honest, I was singing along. So anyways, welcome back to Bitchin' About Broadway at Hawk Radio, Anchor FM. I'm your... And this is Sophia McGregor, the most iconic of all the writers internationally, globally.
I am the writer.
So... You're the writer. The other ones are like miniature writers.
And if you come at me, I'll write your eulogy.
And I'll make TikToks about your funeral. Anyway, I love funerals. Anyways, speaking of funerals, Falsettos.
Oh my god. Sultrally licks death wish.
Anyway. Sophia, I'm going to let you take this away because you have so much to say about this show. This is your thing. I want you to just say, like, your favorite things about the show. Tell us what the audience needs to hear about this show. Like, sell us on it, please, because It's iconic, and there's no one better to say it than you, honestly. That's why I have you. So, Sophia, what you got about falsettos?
Thank you so much. Okay, so this is like, I think one of the best things about this show is the themes and how unique they are. And there are so many different themes. Themes about family, themes about romance, themes about brains versus money. But I think one of the most important things the show teaches us is that masculinity isn't what makes a boy a man. Maturity does. Mm-hmm. And I think the whole falsetto land as a metaphor for immaturity is really, really interesting. And I think it's one of the key metaphors to the show. So when they're singing March of the Falsettos and they have all the boys in falsetto land, they're talking, they're all so blissfully ignorant. Like they're being funny. Like you'll watch March of the Falsettos and you're like, what are they doing? But they're all happy. And I think they're trying to teach us that ignorance is bliss. And when they grow out of falsetto land, they learn reality. And I think they tie this moral from just the family to the entire world during the AIDS epidemic at the ending song, which I think is like the most powerful thing in this show. How they show at first how ignorance is bliss just within the family, but then at the end, when Wizard dies from AIDS and the healthcare system had failed them, they're like, this is where we take a stand. Welcome to falsetto land. Because the government and the healthcare system was completely ignoring the AIDS epidemic. They were in falsetto land. And that isn't the only big thing about the show. There's so much more. You can get into the whole part about misogyny. Falsetto land was actually, March of the Falsettos was actually originally going to be called The Pettiness of Misogyny. And a lot of it's about how Trina was never taken seriously. Like, she goes into therapy for the first time, and Mendel's like, it's all in your head. And themes, not just about homophobia, but about sexism, are also very, very present in the show. And that's what makes Trina as a character so interesting, because Trina is a victim, and yet she's so compelling because she's written so incredibly and made by Stephanie J, played by Stephanie J. Block. I mean, of course, it's iconic.
Also, Eden Espinosa, we love her. And, like, all these other women played her, too, like Faith Prince and Randy Graff. To like just name a couple.
Oh yeah, like Eden was so incredible. I watched her on the tour. I haven't seen the others, but I'm sure they're so amazing, because Trina is such a tough character to nail, and seeing people do it, I'm like, ugh, it's so incredible.
Yeah, and I mean, all of the I've worked with all of them. I saw Faith Prince in my first Broadway show. She was Ursula in The Little Mermaid when I saw
oh yeah,
right. So I saw, that's where I saw her, that's why I know her. But I worked with Eden, Stephanie, and Randy in master classes.
Randy?
No, Randy Graff. Randy Graff, and all of them are incredibly smart teachers, which just shows, like, it's a testament to their work as actors. So I think it's a very specific person who can play Trina.
It is. Really. I've noticed that everyone who plays Trina has, like, they are amazing teachers. You're so right. We both... Elijah actually paid for me to go to the Stephanie J. Block masterclass, and it was so incredible, like, how kind that woman is.
Yeah, and you got to talk to her.
I did, and she was right? So genuine and so amazing, and she...
And you also got to go to the falsettos, the...
Zoom reunion.
The reunion.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
It was... She's so... She gave me such good tips on analyzing the show, and she just seems so kind and so genuine. But Elijah, what are some of your favorite metaphors and falsettos? Like, what one really does it for you?
Okay, this is my favorite right now because I just realized it, like, a week ago. Well, maybe, like, 2 weeks ago. I have no time for a second. I was talking to one of my friends, Megan, who is usually on here. We were just talking about it because she loves the show, too. We talk about it all the time. We even had a watch party at her boyfriend's house with, like, our little squad just to show people falsettos. And... We were talking about the line in I'm Breaking Down with the I found that what I thought was rectangular was round. Is that right?
Yes.
I never really understood it. I just thought it was just like quirky, but I knew it had a deeper meaning. I just didn't understand it. Megan was like, yeah, Elijah. So rectangular has straight edges, and she thought her husband was straight, and what's round is not straight at all, and it's just a complete circle, which, and that's like the metaphor for gay.
Yeah.
And not straight. I'm so stupid. That's my favorite one. It's my favorite one right now because it's the one I just found out. But I'm also big on the chess piece. I'm huge on the chess piece throughout the show. Well, chess as in general, not just the one piece. But the chess piece at the end really does it for me. And then there's a few other things. I like that in the baseball game, it's not about Jason. I mean, like, yes, it's like we're sitting and watching Jason play baseball. It's about Wizard.
Wizard.
It shows that, like, Wizard. Ah! Anyway, I love Wizard. Wizard's my dream role. So, it shows that, like, Wizard can fix anybody, and, like, it also shows that he can fix Marvin in the show, and, like, you see what I'm saying? I read this
somewhere. I told you that.
I'm not quoting it correctly. I feel like you either sent it to me or you told me this. You've told me a lot, okay? Don't come for me. We spent 8 hours a day on the phone for, like, 6 months of my life. Please remember.
We just kind of conjoined brains.
We have. So either I read it or you read it and I have the imagery. So, yeah, I mean, I really like that. That's one of my favorites. I know it's not like symbolism or anything, but this is my favorite. This is actually my favorite.
For real, guys, this one. This is it. I swear.
This is it. No, this is like one of the original ones. I'm trying to think of it. I'm thinking of it in reverse order. There's so much to remember about this show.
Oh, yeah. You could write a dictionary.
So this is not even the tip of the iceberg. This is just like, is that an iceberg? This is, you know.
Titanic.
Very hazy. Sorry, guys. Girl. Okay, anyways. So, what at the end of Falsetto Land Reprise, at the very end of the show, when it ends with that one piano chord and it, like, lasts, we think it's supposed to symbolize, like, the heart line for Wizard, but it's the heart line for Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Falsettos can put symbolism in the instrumentals. Like,
Yeah, period. I mean, Little Women, too.
Ooh.
Little Women. Fire Within Me, when she's writing the story about her sisters, each time she says a different sister's name, it plays a little bit of their song.
Little Women. Isn't that just Miss Juicy Baby?
I'm done. I'm literally done with you. No, but, like, Little Women's another show that we have to talk about eventually because I was in that show. I was Aunt March. Was woke casting. I was Aunt March, and it was wonderful. Great experience. But, you know, that show's kind of underrated, like Falsettos. But it's getting a lot more love because the rights are released, and it's making its rounds to, like, all
world teams. World tour.
And it was Joe was originated by Sutton Foster in the musical. So, I mean, period. So, anyways, back on track. So, those are my personal favorites. But now I kind of want to, like, dive into the casting a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what I find interesting is that they usually double cast children, right? But somehow it's Anthony Rosenthal all the time with understudy.
Yeah, because Anthony Rosenthal's iconic. You
know? No, I'm just saying, like, the legality of that, though.
Yeah, how did that work?
I want to know about that. That's, like, my question. I didn't know if you knew. That's why I brought it up.
I would assume they just had less showings.
Oh, my gosh. I never thought of it that way, but you're,
like,
right.
That's the only way I can see.
Maybe they didn't do 8 shows a week. I'm going to have to ask someone.
Yeah. Shoot a DM. Slide into their DMs. Sultrily lick the envelope.
What? Stephanie and I have DM'd a couple times.
No, Stephanie is so sweet. She always, like, answers fan DMs.
I know.
She's so sweet.
I love her. And also, she's an icon. Like, get out of here. Period. So, okay. So, anyways, back to that. Also, like, with the casting. So, the revival cast, I mean, I'm not going to name understudies, not because I don't, like, not just because I don't care, but it's just that, like, I don't know their work in the show. So I want to talk about like specific work that I've seen, which is everyone in the pro shot. So we had the main character is, it all kind of revolves around Marvin, which was played by Christian Borle. Christian Borle's fantastic. We love Christian Borle. And then Stephanie J. Block played Trina, his ex-wife. Anthony Rosenthal played his son. And Andrew Rannells played Whizzer, which is Marvin's lover. They had an affair. Well, they had the affair on Stephanie J. Block. It was a whole thing. Or Trina. And then Brendan Uranowitz played Mendel, which is the shrink that ends up falling for Trina. And that's a whole story. And then Tracy Toms and Betsy Wolf play Charlotte and Cordelia, the lesbians next door, in the second act. So I think that they are absolutely fantastic. Like, I honestly don't feel like I could have picked a better cast that gelled together and did such a great
job. Their chemistry in the show is just immaculate.
Yes, I know. And that's what I think that too. And also, like, I've seen the revival. Not the revival. The national tour revival cast as well, with Max von Essen and Eden Espinosa and Nick Adams, my Broadway cast. Yeah, you know this.
You guys are gonna become like besties later when you're famous, and he's gonna be like at dinner with the family and be like, you know what would really complete this meal? Bitchin' Bout Broadway by Elijah Zurich. And then he'll listen to this and be like, and immediately call you.
He'll immediately call me and be like, hey bitch. hey bitch, I'm gonna put a ring on it. I would pass out. I don't know what I would say to that. But
you haven't planned out exactly what you would say if Nick Adams called you.
No, but I did plan out. I planned out, like, you know, the shampoo bottles in the shower. Probably no.
I did plan out, but I did a little. Like I didn't, but like I
did a little bit. The shampoo bottles in my shower are the main.
The shampoo bottles in your shower have so much tea. They could like.
The shower head is the priest. And my, like, loofah thingy is the ring bearer. And then, like, the cleaning supplies is the flower girl. This is too good.
Only you would dreamcast your shower.
Anyway, speaking of dreamcasting, I love the national tour cast. I've only seen it one time. But I watched it for my girl Eden and my boy Nick, and I am now obsessed with Max von Essen because his voice is beautiful, and him and Nick Adams have like amazing chemistry together as Marvin and Whizzer, and it's different than Christian Borle and Andrew Rannells' interpretation.
It's not like the other girls.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so I love all the work. I love it all. I have a friend that got to go see the LA premiere of Falsettos. Her name's Ryan, and she's delightful, and I love her very much. So yeah, we've talked about it. I've talked about it with other people. It's a great cast. I love it. So, period. I mean, I don't think they could have picked better cast members for the show, because I mean, it's a big show. I can only imagine their callback process is insane. And the thing about it, for me, like, I was just a swing in Spring Awakening. And
why be a swing when you can be a slide?
Oh, my God. Literally, stop. Literally, please leave. So let me say this. So I think that I was perfect for the swing in Spring Awakening only because I fit more than one male role.
Hi, my name is Elijah Zurich, and I personally believe I am the best person ever.
No, I didn't say that. No, I'm just saying, I'm not even saying I was the best person for the job, period. I'm just saying that I was great for that, because singing through all the music and listening to, like, the show and, like, watching the bootlegs. I know we're not supposed to do it, but I did. I love Lea Michele, and she was, like, great. I know that's controversial, but her voice is fantastic, and she gave a perfect performance as Venla. Don't come for me.
Oh, you're gonna
She did great.
Wait till Twitter hears
about
this.
So enjoyable to watch in the show. Linda.
Who's that?
Yeah, that was like a meme, like back in the early 2000s.
Are you having an affair?
Yes. She works in accounting. Anyways, we're so funny. So, please marry me. Every time I have someone on the show, I like try to get them to marry me on the spot. Like, even with Megan, I'm like, please marry me. And she was like, no. So, it's so weird. I'm so quirky. LOL. So, anyways, I was talking about that. So, I was a swing in Spring Awakening, and I was really good for that because I fit more than one part, and I could see myself in all the characters. Like, I could see little attributes of me in every single one of them, and it was really easy to delve in. The hard thing about falsettos is none of them are really similar.
They are. You know? They're, like, so – they're all so different because they're all so human.
Yeah. Well, I mean, same with Spring Awakening, but what I'm saying is, like, how hard is it to find a male swing for falsettos?
That would be so difficult.
Because if you think about this, like, Trina is the middle ground for, like, in the casting process. Listen, I know there's other things and other factors that play into casting, like, a perfect Charlotte, Cordelia, and Trina, the heroines girlies of our show. However, the girlies. But, however, they play a role that is more similar because they have the common ground of being a woman in that time period, you know? Yeah. And I mean, yes, the men are men in that time period, but the men are all on different common ground. There's really no common ground. They're on different like levels. So Mendel is a straight Jewish man, mm-hmm. right? And he's like awkward and he's like, just kind of like, quirky and odd, which is why I think that Bernie Reynolds was perfect for the role, like great in every way. So that's one, right? Wizard is like, and I mean like Mendel's kind of nerdy, right? He doesn't have to be like masculine, it's like super like hot, you know? But then Wizard is like hot.
We
right?
get it, Elijah. You have a crush.
I mean,
on
at
Nick
least
Adams.
When it's Nick Adams. Okay, listen. Okay. No, Wizard is supposed to be a pretty boy, and they state it very clearly. Wizard is, but also think of the age difference.
Yeah,
all of
and
them
aesthetically,
are
they all have to look different.
So, yes. So, where Wizard is like a, I don't know, he's like one of those gays that goes to the gym. You know, like,
gym gay,
I don't
Disney
know if
gay.
Wizard went to the gym. I don't even know if Wizard is supposed to be a gym gay, but the people who play Wizard are. They're not like scrawny. They're not like little. They're very
Wizard's big body.
I don't even think he's big. Well, Andrew Reynolds is because he's like 6'3", but like, you know, that's Andrew Reynolds. So anyway, moving on. So Wizard is like that. And Marv's kind of like not. He's like the complete polar opposite of that. He's like washed up, trapped in a straight marriage, and he's gay and he's a little tack.
Yeah, Marvin.
You know, and then, of course, Jason is, like, 5 years old, so, like...
Jason's 13!
I mean, same difference. I was... whatever. This literally the same maturity level. Anyway, so, I personally believe that is, like... And obviously, like, Jason is cast as, like, a... Like, 11
Jason's
or
13-year-old
year old
boy. Who learned a couple cuss words and called it a day.
Yeah, my father's a homo, mother's not thrilled at all. He doesn't riff, but you know. So anyway, that's just the men, right? And I'm just thinking, like, how could they get one male swing? Like, honestly, I feel like there's understudy. I don't know like, the exact way they cast it, because I'm not in the casting office for this show. But you have to see where it would be so hard.
It would be.
To find just, okay, beyond the voice, okay, beyond, like, the vocals, because they all sing different vocal parts, right? Where Wizard's a tenor, okay? And we're taking Jason out of the equation because, you know, Jason's cast, it's a different casting. Mendel is like, a baritenor, so he's not, like, a baritone bass, but he is, like, no, Marvin is a baritenor, so he's kind of, like, a in-between there. And then Mendel's, like, a bass.
All about
that he has, like, some,
bass.
Like, tenor tricks up his sleeve. Yes, but you see what I'm saying? Like, vocal part aside.
Yeah.
The body.
body, oddy, oddy, oddy.
It's different. And it's not even just... Please. I'm begging you. So, it's not just the body. It's also just the age. Because, like, Wither is supposed to be, like... Okay. He's usually cast, like, 25 to 30. Or 35, yeah. You know? Like, that age range. But I think, realistically, like, in this plot of the story, Wither is anywhere from 18.
Uh-huh.
Right? Anywhere from, like, 18 to 29.
Yeah, so you've got to have completely different ages.
And I'm saying from the beginning of the story. I'm not saying throughout the whole show. I'm saying, like, he might start somewhere, and he ages up, like, 2 mm-hmm. years, right?
Yeah.
I think you understand what I mean. So, Wither's that age, right? Marvin is like a man out of college, well out of college with a practice. So he's anywhere from 35 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
Because he gets married to Trina.
Not a strapping young man.
Right? And Trina's not fresh out of college by any means. I mean, she's married with a 12-year-old child from the top of the show. So Trina's anywhere from 35 to 45. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. And then Marvin, I think, is anywhere from, like, 38 to 50.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So it's easier to cast a Trina. I'm sure our viewers are like, girl, what is this roadmap? But I think it's easier to cast an understudy for Trina, Charlotte, and Cordelia, like a swing, because you can age a woman up. You know, to look a certain age if she covers, like, all three of them. And, like, you can kind of put her in a different outfit. And, like if you put her in a blazer, she's a Charlotte. And then if you put her in, like, the cropped t-shirt, she's a Charlotte. And then if you just dress her, not more matured, but feminine.
Speaking about that, can you talk about the metaphors and the costuming of this show?
Yes, but let me come back to it. I'm on the tangent. So, yes, and I'll let you talk about that. You can have the costuming. So, yes, that's, like, thing. But, like, the men are so spread out. You know, like, the men, like, they're everywhere. They're not, none of them would, like, be friends outside
and yet they
of
all
the
love
situation.
Each other.
You know? Yes, but do you see what I mean by, like, none of them would, like, meet somewhere? Because they're all of different background and different levels of life. Because they're all different ages and have a different maturity level. So do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's hard in the casting office to find one man, I think, to be the swing for all the men in falsettos. I'm sorry, but that's what I think. Period.
Okay, so I think what's so cool about the costumes is, like, just how the metaphors they represent. You'll notice how, first off, the contrast between Marvin and Wither, because Wither is, like, in mint and brown, almost like mint chocolate chip. Like, he looks very fresh, you know, very young, whereas Marvin's, like, plaid, and kind of shows his, like, obsession with masculinity. And as the show progresses, Marvin's outfits get softer. He goes from, like, pants and belt to, like, a sweater. And it shows him becoming more comfortable in his sexuality. I think that Trina's clothes are some of the most interesting, because you'll notice...
And I told you this.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of them.
No, the first time we watched falsettos together, you were like, and I was like, but, Trina almost looks like she's growing out of her clothes. Like, her pants are too short. Her cardigan, doesn't fit right. Like, you'll notice it looks like she's growing out of her clothes, and that symbolizes her growing out of her situation. And when she gets with Mendel and she starts more of her new life, it shows that she's more comfortable in her clothes.
Like, her sleeves are the right length, and her dress looks like it matches the sleeves, and, like, the color tones are more harmonious.
Yeah, it goes more together. And then Jason he wears layered clothes all the time, and I think it symbolizes his many layers as a person that often get overlooked.
Girl, literally, I'm out. I'm done. Also, I think that, like, I know it's stupid, but I think that
I think it's interesting what you said about Marvin, and I'm going to bring it into the lesbians. I think when we first meet Cordelia, she's in a crop top. And I think it is, I think it does symbolize that she's very open and upfront and very outgoing. And she's very, like, raw to the core. Like, I mean, because her core is a little exposed. But, like, it's very raw to the core with, like, her being a lesbian and very open about it and very comfortable in her relationship.
Wait, I love that. I think that Charlotte wears a doctor's coat, and it symbolizes that she's a doctor. I don't know. I don't want to get too crazy.
Well, actually, I do have some symbolism for that, too. I think that not only is it showing that she's a doctor, but I think it shows that she's trying to fix the wrongs of the world by like a doctor fixes things and people. And I think that she, because when she says something, when something bad is happening, she's the one who's like thinking about it and thinking about how to change it with the AIDS.
She is. Charlotte's.
And I think that it shows that even out of work, she's still trying to fix things, and she keeps that like doctor aesthetic, and her guard is never down. And I love that. I think that's great. I think that's so clever, so subtle and clever. Yeah, and Mendel, his stuff is like off the wall, kind of quirky, like doesn't really fit with anyone else because, you know, like he wears like a sweater vest, right? No, it's not a sweater vest. It's like a sweater looking. I don't even know what to call that.
He wears a special outfit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's not an article of clothing that I'm familiar with.
It's not
but,
on Broadway.
Yeah, well, it's not something I'm familiar with, but he sure wears it. So, that's. Wow, we kind of killed that with the costume.
Look at us. Period. We're so we really good at dissecting. No, we should be scientists.
Oh my gosh, I have been dissecting stuff at biology, and it's
gross. You had, like, animals?
Yeah, like, a crawfish. I know, and, it wasn't bad, it wasn't, like, the worst thing. And then there was something else we did, but, like, I did this during, like, marine biology, like, the worst thing was the squid.
Oh, you should dissect a squid.
Because we did it at the Tampa, Aquarium, because, you know, it's a very specific thing to have squid. So, we did it at the Tampa Aquarium. But the guy was like, LOL, teamwork. Everyone gets one glove and you have to literally pull it apart together. But like the way we were doing it, because we couldn't use our other hand, it was so weird. Because they're like, okay, pull out the beak. And like, I would like have to hold the squid and then like stuff came out the other side. It was weird. Or off topic. Anyway, this was before, like I knew of you, you knew of me. But we did this on the very opening of ABPM.
This was in our opening number. The prologue.
Yeah, like when you were like, I think you should be on Broadway, Elijah. And I was like, you know what? I love you. And then that was like, it. I was like, you know, no, that was during the Illegal Mean Girls concert. When you said that, that's when that story was. We're so weird. But yeah, throw back to when you were the girl that didn't even go there and I was Damien. We're so cute. Okay, anyways, I'm not done. So. Yes, that's my symbolism with the costumes, and I think that we really crushed that, Greggy. I think we, like, really know what we're talking about. But there's even more symbolism, because, wait, there's more. Let's talk about that set, and I think you need to say it, because I'm gonna butcher it. You need to say it, because I...
So the cue. Yeah. If you're not familiar with the actual set of the show...
And this is exclusively in the revival, though, right? Because I haven't seen it in any other
the revival.
Go off.
So you'll see that the set is a cube. And, you know, they can't just have a block set without symbolism behind it. No, no, no. So a lot of people who have dissected the show think that the cube represents Falsetto Land. And they notice...
As it should be.
No, not quite. And they think that, like... Oh, as they grow, the cube goes away. Because, you know, throughout the show, you'll notice, like, the cube disappears. But the cube comes back at the end of the show. So this leads me to believe that the cube...
Wait, can we explain to the viewers, like, how it looks? Can I just do that real quick, and then I'll let you continue? Okay, cool. So it's a cube.
but there are multiple components and it's pulled apart in like different squares, and like some of the different squares look like an abstract chair, or they come together and make an abstract couch, or like one's kind of like, it's just like little rectangles, and you fold them in a certain way, they look like a table. So they're moved around throughout the show, and like some are triangular and they like fit at the top. It's like a, it's a thing. It's, there's different shapes, but they all fit together in the square. Anyways, this is going to come back when Greggy really fully explains it. I just wanted to explain the general shaping. So in the beginning of the show, it starts out all put together in a cube, and in the opening number they take it apart and create the set of the house.
So,
and then it's moved around throughout the show. But that's how it begins. Anyway, sorry.
No, that was very helpful that we should know that. The cube actually represents Marvin's fantasy, which is the tight-knit family. So the cube doesn't represent Falsetto Land. It represents the tight-knit family. And it's like, the cube's like Marvin's.
And that's honestly the open, that's like the opening number two. Tight-knit family is like the opening number two, because I consider Four Jews in a Room it, to be the prologue of the
show. That makes sense.
So not quite the beginning. It's just more like the, it's more of like the, like in, like at that. And also this makes sense. And like that time, because the, like the 70s and the 80s, the credits would be at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the theme song before the show. That's
a really good way of looking at it. I haven't thought about it like that.
And then even in the second one, it's like, it's the 80s. Yabba dabba da. Ooh, the 80s. And it's like a little, it's like a little thing. It's like a little way of starting their little show. It's like, if you imagine it, it's like the little face comes up, it's like Wizard played by you know, it's like the little, it's like Gilligan's Island, like the skipper to the millionaire and his wife,
true best friend,
the movie star, and the rest are here in Gilligan's Island. It's like that, but like, it's like here in Falsetto Land. It's like that, you know. Anyways, that's one of my favorites. I came up with that. I don't know if it's true, but it fits. Anyway, okay. Go off, Greggy.
So, this is how the cube represents the tight-knit family. So, at the beginning, the tight-knit family is completely intact. He's got his wife, his son, and his lover all in reach of his manipulation. And since he doesn't acknowledge that he's a problem, he pretends and views his family as, like, loving and intact. So, the cube stays intact. In his fantasy, the family's, like, perfect. So, the cube's perfect. Now, when Trina moves in with Mendel, she's no longer in Marvin's fantasy or family, so she doesn't have the cube. She has real furniture instead. And then when Marvin hits Trina, he completely knocks the cube down.
And this is the first time in the show that real furniture is seen in the entire show. So it's nowhere else until this point in the show.
And when Marvin hits Trina, like, the cube falls down because the tight-knit family has fallen apart and he no longer can manipulate her. Now, when Wizard's in the hospital bed, the tight-knit family's fallen apart now that Wizard's at risk. Because, like, the second Wizard is, like, not going to be okay, like, the fantasy's over. And this is, I think, one of, the, like, the best parts. So, at the end, a piece of the cube is missing, and it becomes his gravestone, because Marvin's family and the fantasy and his tight-knit family will never be complete again.
Damn.
It did.
But yeah, also I do want to elaborate on that with Wizard. There's a lot more to Wizard than we said earlier. It's not just like that he's like basically the mistress or like, you know. I know, he's not just that. There's other things that play into Wizard that may, he's not just like a hoe bag, but like honestly, I think that it's really interesting that they didn't make him like the Wizard's the worst. He stole my husband. Because even in Breaking Down, she's like, I want to hate him, but I really can't. And she says that. I think that's really interesting that she says that. Because also, and then it comes back later in What Would I Do? And he says, the only one my child would allow. Out of 1,000 others, only one my child would allow. And I think it's because, I know it's because. I don't think this. This is not a theory. This is just like plain and simple truth. Wizard held the family together silently. And here's how. Okay? Because Jason valued Wizard's opinion over everyone else's. Because Wizard was sane. In Jason's head, he didn't view anyone else as fully sane other than Wizard.
Yep.
Wizard is a
baddie.
You follow? I don't even know if Wizard's a baddie. Well, I mean, he's gotta be. He was gay and that's
no. Very open. Wizard was the only person Jason trusted.
Yes, 100%. So, like, even when they were like, you should go to therapy, he was like, well, guess what? I want to talk to a wizard. And Trina was like, all right, bring him in, you know? And, like, Marvin was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, like, it's the worst situation to be like, can I get the mistress? Like, you know, but, like, he still came in, and Trina wasn't like, you bitch. Like, it wasn't like that. She was just like, hey, wizard.
Which you could hate, because wizard's he's not very easy to hate. He's a legend. He's iconic.
Much like me, we are legendary icons.
No wonder you like him so much.
Me and the Wiz. I love him. I love him so much. He's so sweet.
Elijah made me a worm on string, like a giant one, and his name is Wizard. And he sits on my bed and I sleep with him every night.
It's gotta be like
it 4 feet long. No, it's like 4 or 5 feet long.
Okay. I wasn't sure. It's been a while since I made it. I like told her to come over. I was like, I bought the fabric. We're gonna make this worm. And we watched falsettos, and I, like, had my sewing machine on the floor, and I, like, sewed the worm. It was so weird. It was, like, the weirdest thing we've... I wish I could say that was the weirdest thing we've done. That's not even,
like, the top five weirdest things we've done.
No, it's not even in the top five. That's probably one of the most normal things we've done, though. That's, like, definitely in the top three most normal things we've done. Like, oh my gosh, we're the worst. Anyway, so, yes. Wizard, there's a lot more to Wizard than, like, that. So, like, when it comes back in the cube with, like, the piece missing, and ironically, the piece is the center.
Mm-hmm.
The piece that they pull out for the gravestone is the center piece of the cube, and it's folded to, or stacked in the way that everything stays the same, but, like, the middle piece is, like, obviously hollow. So, it shows that, like, the heart of the family has been, like, replaced. Because
Wizard's the glue that holds the whole family together.
Even though that's so weird, because like,
yeah, you would think he'd be tearing it apart, but he's the one who ends up holding them together.
I mean, literally iconic. Like, literally, he was just like, Uno reverse. I hold this together. And they're all like, okay, that seems reasonable. But he has a point. I know, right? So I think that's the real tea on it. I love that for him. And also, can you explain the chess metaphor from Act 1
to the end of Act 2? Yes, so you know how I was saying how, like, dinner represents femininity? Well, chess represents masculinity. So you'll notice how Jason obsessively plays chess, and that is because he so badly wants to be masculine and he doesn't want to be gay. And so Jason obsessively plays chess. Now, Marvin and Wizard plays chess together. Now, this leads us to the chess game, which is a pivotal point in the show. And if you're just looking at it surface level, basically, Marvin and Wizard are playing chess. Marvin's like, Wizard, I'll let you in. Wizard wins. And then Marvin's like, I hate you. We're breaking up. Goodbye forever. But what?
We break up. Yes, baby, I'll give you my hand. Wait, what?
Wait, what was that?
That's from Legally Blonde.
Christian Borle with a big ego. Christian Borle just plays everyone with a big ego. But, anyways.
I feel like he actually must have a big ego. I've only met him once, but that's it. And he was very nice to me. I was scared because he seems to be the kind of man that will just say what he wants and not think another thought about it. And he was very good to me. So, Christian Borle, if you're listening to this, I do stan you and all of your work.
You seem like a very nice boy.
Because when we met, I was like, I know. When I met him, I was like, I love you. And he was like, okay. So, my friend Ben was on the call and he was like, the Borle. And I was like, yes, the Borle.
What the chess game means is it's a symbol of masculinity. So Marvin wants to win at chess because he wants to be the man in this relationship. Marvin's like, woman, and Wizard's like, no. So they're playing chess and Marvin's like, you know what? I'll let you win. I'll be the man. But it turns out that Wizard didn't need Marvin to let him win. Because Wizard is a man. That's who he is. So Wizard wins without Marvin even needing to let him win. And Marvin flips out because Marvin's like, how dare you be more masculine than me? And he leaves because he has fragile masculinity.
Oh, yeah. We love to see it. We don't love to see it. Men, if we just described you.
Are you in this picture? If so, get help.
Did you tag yourself?
Tag yourself. We're so funny. Anyways, moving on. The chess.
Yeah, so that's basically the whole of the chess metaphor. And you'll also notice, like, Corinna doesn't really play chess. None of the women play chess because they're not worried about proving themselves to be masculine. And Mendel doesn't play chess because he already knows he's a man. He doesn't question that.
And then, okay, lovely. So, but how does that come back?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So, when Wizard dies, Jason puts the king chess piece on his grave. And that symbolizes Wizard being a man. Period.
I mean, period. Mm-hmm. It's like the last beat of the show, too. Like, no play, all slay.
It's so good.
Every day, all day.
And it also represents that, like, Wizard had won and that he was a good man.
I mean, like,
literally, it's so sad. It's beautiful.
Guys, Wizard's the best character ever.
Falsetto is just poetry in 3D.
That's why you love it.
Falsetto is just poetry, but they got some blocks.
There's other. I mean, period. And I mean, there's other shows like Falsettos in that way. Like, I'm a huge fan of, like, every Jason Robert Brown work. Like, 13. 13 is a little more on the surface, though. But, I mean, if you take the time, you can find some.
I like stuff. How the first Jason Robert Brown show you picked is 13.
Well, it was the one I was in the most. I did it twice as a child. Yeah, 13 is a very influential in my growing 13 up 13 is a
staple.
I will have.
Why go through puberty when you can go through 13 multiple times?
I like that there's going to be a whole generation of people that don't know 13 the way I do. Like, I'm watching Dynasty on Netflix, and Liz Gillies is Fallon Carrington in the reboot, and she was the original Lucy in 13. So I grew up listening to her on the cast recording. So of course I know who she is, but like everyone else knows her from like Victorious. And I'm like, yeah, but like 13. So I don't know. It's just random. So yeah, period. And what else? What else was I saying? Oh my gosh. I got like so off. But anyway, and also my personal favorite, Parade. That's like the best one, in my opinion, that Jason's done. It's a masterpiece. And I was recently in Songs for a New World, and you could really get into that one. Like, you could really read a lot into that. I'm not even sure if it's all intentional or if it's just the way things are placed. But it does have some stuff like that, you know? There's so many amazing shows, and Falsetto's just one of them. And, like, things like Falsetto's and Parade are so underrated. And Come From Away. Oh my gosh, Come From Away is another one. There are some really valuable shows that get really brushed aside. But they're like
the core to theater, because theater is about telling story, and these shows do it the best.
And not just like telling story. I think it's about raising awareness to causes that we ignore. And I think that I feel like Falsettos really brings out. I think it really brings out that, you know, like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, it brings out these things that, like, people aren't talking about, like, the toxic masculinity and the internalized homophobia in actual gay people. Yeah. You know? Because they're taught it's wrong. And, I feel like other shows with gay people are just like, it's okay to be gay. And at the end, they're like, yay, we're gay and we love it. And, yeah, but I mean, like, and I'm not, like, saying those shows are bad. I'm just saying that, like, this shows a different side to it. And people, we need all those shows. We need all those shows. But
we
like
do.
This specifically, this story needs to be told more. Because I don't know. I feel that way. And same with Come From Away. Like, that was the story that, like, and Come From Away is a true story. And, like, I don't know. It's just, it's about 9/11 and it's heavy. But we need to hear it, and it's beautiful, and same with this, and same with Parade. It's a true story as well, and we need to hear it. So, I don't know. I think we need to do better by, like, doing shows, you know? And, like, I hope that more community theaters and high schools put on shows like this, because they raise awareness, and you think about them long after you see it.
you know, it's not something that you mm-hmm. see and you're like, yes, that was fine. You know, like when I saw, and I'm not saying anything bad about this, but like when I saw Mean Girls and like Beetlejuice and there are other shows, like, I don't know. Those are just the two I'm looking at right now. I'm looking at my poster wall. It's not saying the shows are bad. Please don't take this out on the wrong way. But I'm saying, like, their morals were a little bit more obvious. And you're like, oh, that was such a good show. And, like, your takeaway is, like, the cast, which you should, because the casts were phenomenal. And the set and the lighting and the way things were done in the show mm-hmm. and, like, the comedic moments, you know? But, like, with falsettos, you take away that, but you also leave thinking, like, wow, like, that character really said yeah. this or did this or thought this. And why did they think that? Well, maybe it was because this character said this, did this, or acted a certain way. And you think about, and then it starts applying itself to your everyday yeah. life, like, subconsciously. You know, the show does it for you. It drives you. Because, like, ever since I saw falsettos, I mean, take out, like, the gay people. You know, like, I know that's what it's very centered around.
Falsettos completely changed my view of masculinity and what it meant.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I think that we put a lot, especially now in this day and age, we literally question our gender. I mean, I go by he, him pronouns, but I have a lot of friends that now go by they, them, or he, they, or she, they, or he, him, or she, her, and they, sorry, there's a lot of syllables, okay? But, like, but they've, like, changed their literal pronouns, and even a year ago, I'd have been like, wait, what? But, like, how? You know? But now that's, like, an option. And I think that, like, really falls in mm-hmm. with the masculinity thing. Like,
I do. And I also feel like really big moral from falsettos is not to play games. And I think it says a lot about, like, Snapchat culture and people, like, being like, oh, is he going to say this? And just being kind of weird, being manipulative with, like, relationships. I feel like that's very common in high school where people just kind of manipulate each other and just kind of see. But a lot of the times I'll see people and I'll be like, this person needs to watch falsettos because playing games never works and cheating is never a good idea.
Right. You know, and I don't know. And also I know that, like, Trina views it as cheating, you know, but I almost wonder if Christian Borle's character, Marvin, didn't even view it that way. And let me explain. I feel like, because he is a gay man, I feel like mentally he could have just been like, I'm trapped in a lie, and this is who I really am, and he wasn't thinking of it as, like, cheating, but where, like, his marriage was just a charade for appearances, and he didn't even view it as cheating, even though the audience for falsettos is mostly LGBTQ, honestly, like, the viewers, but... like, the people in the audience think, like, oh, he cheated on her, right? But I think it goes deeper than that, and there's such a medium.
Oh, yeah.
Of this story. Do you see what I'm saying? I think it's very specific. It's very specific, and it leaves so much.
And, you know, in poetry,
they
advise you to be as specific as possible, to be as specific and vulnerable, because a lot of people think, like, oh, just make a really broad topic so more people relate to it. But people will find more attachment to specific things.
Yeah, and that's why I honestly hate to be this way. But I'm going to, shift this conversation uh-huh. to Six the Musical for a second. Because Six the Musical, right, it's broad. But if you think about it, it is very specific. Okay? Because each one of the queens, each one of the, like, the contestants in the show had a different situation with the same man, and they each came from a different place. So none of those women had the same experience. Even if they did in real life, they did not put them on common ground.
Uh-huh.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, where Catherine of Aragon was married to him for 24 years, and she did all these things for England, like, going into war and, like, being, like, a political figure, and was divorced because mm-hmm. he just found interest in Anne Boleyn. You know, but then Anne Boleyn was beheaded because
she supposedly cheated on him. But Anne Boleyn, like you said, played the games and she kind of paid for it. And then, like, Jane Seymour actually loved him, but she knew it wasn't, like, the best relationship. And then Anna of Cleves was pushed into it because she was young. And he met her, like, at a bar and he kind of scared her away because he was, like, undercover. And she was like, and she didn't even speak the language. She didn't even know what was going on, you know? And then, like, Catherine Howard was abused. Like, abused, you know? I mean, I think they were all abused, but I think Catherine Howard's was so specific. And then Catherine Parr went into the marriage trying to change the world and make things better for women. So I think that it's really interesting that they got so specific with each one of the wives. And they dive into it more in the show. And they got so specific with it that they made the show specific, even though it, on paper, yes, it's broad because there's something for everyone. But there's a character for everyone because the characters are so
specific.
That's
so true.
Period.
I mean, period. And I think the same with falsettos. Like, I know people like that aren't necessarily LGBTQ, but relate.
Yeah, because falsettos.
One of the gay characters. You know what I'm saying? My friend Ben, who I do shows with, my Megan's boyfriend, the one that's usually on here. He really relates to Marvin and he loves Marvin. But he's a heterosexual man. You know, like he's with Megan. But he sees Marvin in the way of like Marvin's like questioning and Marvin's like just blunt and very and very specific in his ways. And Ben is a lot like that. And that there's nothing wrong with Ben, of course. And, like, it's not like he's any less straight being like, oh, I'm a fan of Marvin. It just shows that he's secure enough to see himself in that character.
And
I think that's
so, like, important with falsettos because the character development is beyond their sexualities.
Exactly. And I think it's really nice because the sexualities take the back seat and it's not.
Yeah, because I hate it when people are like, oh yeah, falsettos is about just gay people. Because yes, it is, but there's so much more to it. Because what makes falsettos so different is that they portray an untraditional family with traditional family values.
It's about humans. It's about humans, period. End of story. Like, it's not about, like, humans who are gay. No, there are humans who are gay in the show.
Falsettos isn't about being gay. While it's LGBT, like, representation is so important and so crucial, falsettos is not just about gay people. I mean, there's so much more to it. And I think it's so important to represent gay people in scenarios that aren't just about their sexuality.
Exactly. And I love the show for that. Because there's not a lot of characters whose personality trait goes beyond that. You know? And, like, I'm just going to say it. Like, even in Spring Awakening, when I was recently in it, I did end up going on for all the shows as Ernst, who is gay. But that's his one trait. Mm-hmm. That's his one thing. That's what he represents in the show. But also, that show, you know, that wasn't even fair because honestly, that show represents sexuality, period. Just sexuality. That's why it's called Spring Awakening. It's literally like the most poetic way of saying puberty. You know? Like, that's what it is. Like, it's sexuality, and every character in that represents a different sexual struggle. Every single one of them. Whether it be the adults or the children in the show. And then when I say children, I mean like 18 and up playing children, playing 14-year-olds. I'm not saying there's like 5-year-olds in a show about sex. But you see what I mean? Like the adults being matured and understanding, but keeping it from the young characters of the show and the young characters questioning. And like Melchior, our lead, he's like a normal straight guy, but he's very comfortable with it. And he's the one that no one would answer his question, so he educated himself, you know? And then Moritz is also, I would say, you know, they never say he could be
something other than straight, but we're led to believe he is straight. He's the second main character, but he's afraid of it. Oh. Like, afraid of sex in general, you know? And the whole show is like, are we afraid of sex? Are we for sex? And then there's like other characters in the show that are abused sexually, like Ilsa and Martha. And then Hanshin, who we're literally not even sure like what team he plays for, because he's talking about a woman in the first act, but in the second act he's seducing Ernst. Like, what? I'm not even sure if he represents bi people. I think he just represents like hypersexual people or sexual predators. Because if you look at the situation, we're not even sure if Ernst really had a choice in that situation. But Ernst did have a thing for Hanshin and gave into it, you know? And then, of course, like, that show is about, like, questioning sexuality, but where Falsettos is about, like, love isn't sex. Like, we know our sexualities, but now we know love isn't. You know, like, when she says in the first act, love isn't sex. And that's another thing that brings me to, like, did Marv even consider it cheating? Because I think he loves Trina in a way, like, but maybe not as, like, a...
Yeah.
You know, like, the way he loves Whizzer. Like, when she says love isn't sex, I'm like, maybe he loves Trina, but he doesn't love having sex with Trina. Because even when he's at in the three-part mini opera, in the Marvin the psychiatrist, the three-part mini opera, when he says, I did the exact line, I'm sorry, I'm not Mendel, I'm a wizard, I have wizard stuff memorized. When he says something about, like, when he's naked, does he thrill you? And he was like, yes. And it was like immediate. I think that shows that in the first act, he doesn't even love Whizzer as a person. He loves him for a body.
Okay.
And I think he loves Trina as a person. But he's not afraid to hurt her because.
But then again, Marvin's very selfish. I don't know for sure if he did actually love Trina. He could have, or she could have just been part of his charade because he was extremely manipulative.
Yeah, but I do think that he did grow to love Trina, even if he didn't love her at first. I will say that. Even if he currently didn't, I think he eventually did. That's my personal thoughts on it. But until we have William Finn in the room, the jury's still out. You know? Because once I said, like, the show's left to interpretation, and I have a theory as to why it is. Like you said, writing is supposed to be as specific as possible, right? Descriptive, that's what makes good writing. Yeah, they were descriptive, yet cryptic. And I think that it's cryptic because I think that William Finn and everyone that developed the show knew that there would be someone in the audience who related to it one way or another, and they didn't want to make it so specific that that person in the audience couldn't relate to it.
It is.
I think that it's made for everyone. I think that they have gay characters just to show that they're people too, and that they are that their sexuality isn't what makes them like, ooh, the gay character. You know, like in Spring Awakening, I was like, I play Ernst, and they're like, which one's that again? Because, you know, they all kind of wear the same uniform. I'm like, the gay one. And they're like, oh, you know, like in Falsettos, it's like, I'm a wizard, and it's like, oh, period, you're a wizard. Like, we know exactly who he is. Yes, he is. And if I had to explain it, I'd be like, I would have to say, like, he is... Uh-huh. I couldn't say he's the gay one because there's, like, five, you know? I could just be like, the one that Andrew Brannon plays. And they're like, oh, period. You know? Like, I mean, obviously I'm not in Falsettos, but if I were in Falsettos and I was Whizzer, that's how I would say it. So, I personally believe that the show is left to interpretation only to touch more people and bring more people into it than lock them out. And I think that we've gotten into a culture, I was just discussing this with my mom, we've gotten into a culture of like where gay people can only play gay people, but there is a double standard because gay people have fought forever to also be considered for being cast as straight people. Are we going to lock gay people out of straight people? Out of straight characters?
Yep. There's such a double standard.
Do you see what I'm saying? There is a double standard. We can't ask for special treatment and then expect a like an even playing field when we want it to an even playing field in our favor.
Uh-huh.
I mean, period. Like, I'm not afraid to say it. Like, that's what it is. Like, I would certainly hope that I would be considered for all sexualities. Obviously, there are some things like
that's a trans I think story
that
to tell.
That's just something in itself. That's something in itself. But yes. A sexuality shouldn't. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, with the prom, like, I've heard a lot of, like, okay, but, like, Barry has to be, and I've even heard, like, a plus-sized gay man. And Barry's one of my dream roles, and I don't consider myself plus-sized. I mean, I'm not, like, pencil skinny either. I'm no model. But, like, I mean, like, it could be. But, like, I'm not a plus-sized model. And I'm not, but I'm not, like, super duper skinny
but
either
also
and I
with
don't
that
have, like,
we should still be considering
yet.
Plus
but,
size people for lead roles and the role. Yeah,
no, we should be considering plus size people for every role, right? But there's nothing saying that Barry is, just because it was originated by Brooke Sashimankis and I don't even consider him plus size, you know. I don't even consider Brooks plus size. I just think that he's an older gentleman. And a very talented gentleman, indeed. Like, I think he's, I think he embodied the character when they were developing the show and it turned into that. And then I guess, like, James Corden was, like, the celebrity doppelganger in a way because, like, it just fits similar with, like, Meryl Streep. You see what I'm saying? But, like, what I'm saying is, like, yes, but, like, what I'm saying, I mean, Christian Borle is a straight
actor.
And
he does it real well.
And he plays Marvin. Incredible.
Really? I didn't
know
that,
and
actually.
So is Max von Essen. Yes, he is. So, I mean,
it's
period.
Just about, like, opening the playing field for people of all sexualities to play all sorts of things, because your sexuality doesn't define you.
Right, and also, like, I don't even know if the lesbians in the show are actually lesbians. Like, I mean, I don't know their lives. I know Betsy Wolf is married, like, to a man, so she played a lesbian.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, like, that's a whole other topic, but it still correlates.
Uh-huh.
That still correlates. Like, I mean, come on. I mean, really, like, what are you going to say? Like, if I go in for, I mean, like, those of you who don't know me, I mean, this is a podcast, and you only hear my voice, but
I wear
crop tops. I'm wearing a crop top right now. Literally, I'm wearing a crop top right now. And it's actually become more and more normal for boys to wear crop tops. And it's not just, not like a gay boy thing. It's an all boy thing. You know, like, I mean, and I'm asexual, so I'm not picking a side, you know, because, like, let's be real. I've never been in love with anyone. Don't intend to be anytime soon. So I could be effeminate. But I wouldn't say I'm not straight.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just not, like, the typical straight. You see what I'm saying? But I wouldn't go as far as to claim that I'm gay either. Because I don't find myself attracted to men or women. I find myself, and it's not even like I'm attracted to everyone. It's like I'm just genuinely not attracted to anyone. You know, and I just exist as if it's me, and I have really close friends. Like, Sophia, you're one of them, of course. Like, you're one of my most dear friends, which is why, like, we talk all the time. And you know that, but, like, I'm not attracted to you that way, but I'm attracted to you because you stimulate me mentally. Because we can have these conversations all night. And we have. We've had these conversations till, like, 6 and 7 in the morning. Like, these exact, like, I've laid in bed, I've fallen asleep on the phone, and you're like, Elijah, and I'm like, girl, what? You know, like, literally, and I don't get sick of you.
Yeah.
But, like, and I mean, you have a boyfriend, and, like, we're cool enough to know that, like, that's not us. I'm just your cool bestie, and you're my cool bestie. And, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, like, if anyone does listen to this, I want them to understand that being a certain, coming off a certain way doesn't mean anything, right? Like, there's this girl that works at my theater, and she wears flannels, and, like,
true.
I mean, she drives a truck. I thought she was a lesbian, but she has a boyfriend, you know?
And I don't even think she's bi. I think she's, like, always been straight. You know, like, I mean, like, and it, like, I was, like, I felt so bad for assuming, too. Because, like, that's a stereotype. And I was, like, you know what? I'm trying to break the stereotype. Like, how dare me literally assume Miss Ma'am is a lesbian when she's, I mean, I don't know her that well. But, I mean, like, I saw her boyfriend. I was, like, oh, hey. Wow.
Yeah.
You know? And I didn't realize it. So, I don't know. I do think that this correlates into our discussion today because of, like, the LGBTQ topic and how it is not the main plot. It,
almost definitely.
It enhances the plot, yes, but it is not the main plot. Also, like, how would falsettos work?
Wizard is just my a close very friend. Good like, friend.
Wizard is my very good friend. We are roommates while I am moving out with my wife. And the ladies next door are sisters. But of course, like, Tracy sister Toms is like...
More close.
Does looks nothing like Betsy Wolf. I mean, like, that doesn't mean anything either. Because that could get me on the tangent of blind casting. See, I can't win. Again, you can't win. You know?
It should be.
And I can't win because theater should be open to everyone. It shouldn't be open to, like, okay, this role calls for a very specific... Yes, it there's does sometimes. However, there's always up to interpretation. Like, when I played Sweeney Todd, like, I remember everyone was like, it's dark, and it's Johnny Depp, and it's this, that, and the other, and Elijah is funny, and he will never do it. But guess what? I did it. Guess what? I did it. Guess what? Mic drop. I did it. Like, literally, like, I killed that. And here's the thing, like, I read into that script something things that no one else would, is because I have such dark humor. Sondheim's I saw the dark humor. And Sondheim's a comedian. You can see that in all his work. So I was finding, like, the...
Yeah.
You know what? This is actually kind of funny. I gotta say it this way. It's not always so serious, you know? You can't lock yourself into one level, otherwise it's monotone. And that's just all acting. I mean, there are obviously times, like, if someone's, like, if your wife is, like, dying on stage, then you can't be like, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, and I mean, like, I wouldn't be singing Gotta Die Sometime from falsettos, like, poking a joke. But, like, he is, like, poking a joke a little sexy bit. He's like, you know, like, he's like, life sucks. You know, and you know he says that. He's not like, life sucks. He's like, life sucks. Yeah. And he's saying it in the way of, like, Patti LuPone pouring a martini. And that in itself is a little bit like, but you know, he's like, and I actually sang games I played for Stephanie, who was, of course, Trina in the revival cast. And we really got into it. And she was like, you know, Wizard's not going to be so upfront with his, like, gaping wound, you know? And even, like, the line of, like, the, I am sure his divorce is a tribute to me, you know? It's not like, I'm sure his divorce is a tribute to me. It's like, I'm sure his divorce is a tribute to me. Like, I did that. I suck. And it's almost like a moment of, like, girl, this is probably my karma because I broke up that marriage and now I'm literally, like, on the street. You know? And he's just like, well, shit. You know? It's like that. And then even when he's like, it's tough, my friend. Love's looking strong. You know, he's just like, isn't it peachy? So... I mean, I'm saying there are so many levels and it's not one thing. And I think a lot of people, like, the audience sees something originally and they're like, this is one thing. You know? And, like, even, like, in Little Mermaid, because, like, it's a cartoon, right? And, like,
okay.
No, listen to this. This shook me as a child, okay? In the movie, all the Ariel sisters... It also, like, getting into the animation, all of Ariel's sisters look exactly the same with a different hair and a different, like, mermaid tail color, right? And, like, Ariel is, like, drawn completely different because she's the main character and she has to look a certain way. Those are his background characters, right? In the Broadway show, they all had different personalities. And get this, they were all different races. Some were white, but then some were also, like, African American or Asian. And they were all different levels. And then King Triton was Norm Lewis, who was a black man. And then Ursula, right, was Sherry Renee Scott, who looked nothing like the purple octopus in the movie.
You know? And, like, the costume, her aesthetic was,
diversity
like,
in theater is and so greens. Important.
It wasn't even, like, purple and black. You know? No, but what I'm saying is that show didn't do well. And, like, it should have done better because that was, like, the pre-Hamilton, like, you know what? Everyone's a different race. You know? And, I mean, obviously, Ariel was originated by Sierra Boggess, who was a white woman and is a white woman. She's still around. But when it went on national tour, when I got to see it on national tour many years later, Diana Huey, an Asian American woman, played Ariel. And she got flack for it. And I had the honor of meeting her multiple times. Okay, so we had a short little malfunction, guys. We exceeded the time limit on that recording. So anyways, I was saying that I saw Little Mermaid on national tour and Diana Huey played Ariel and she was absolutely fantastic. Like, it's such a gem to me and like crazy talented. I love all of her work. I wish I had seen her in more things. I can't wait to see her when things come back because she's delightful and fantastic and amazing. But anyway, coming back to falsettos, I think that we need to treat all shows as like, you know, just care, like the character and not like get too specific as to like who can play it and be like the gatekeepers of that, because that just kind of goes against acting in general.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. And it's very ridiculous. And I just wanted to say that. But anyways, getting back to falsettos, Sophia, is there anything else about the plot that you find interesting?
Oh, there's so much. I think the main thing is the character development. I don't think it's the plot that makes the show so incredible. I think it's the metaphors and the symbolism, and it really is such a masterpiece, especially with the things that represent femininity, masculinity, the set, the costumes, all of that. Everything I've said, I think, is just incredible.
Yeah, and this revival that they did, that everyone should watch, by the way, and listen to on cast recording, was so necessary.
It was.
And I just wanted to, I'm so happy that we get to share it through here and spread the word, because it's amazing. And there's nothing like it, and there'll never be anything else like it, because it's so specific.
It's so incredible.
And it serves such a necessary purpose. And I'm so happy to have it in my life, like the show in many capacities.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, we actually don't have any more time to talk because, you know, we were already kicked off one time.
So, we've been booted.
We've been booted like twice. Oh my god. So I just wanted to say that you can watch the revival cast on Pro Shot now on Broadway HD, and you can find the cast recording on Spotify, Amazon, and of course YouTube. And I listen to it all the time. I clean the house with it. I'm in the car with it. I rent it from the library because I'm too cheap. So it's guys, come on. I'm sorry. You got to be cheap somewhere. I'm very expensive. So this is where we leave you guys. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've learned a lot today from this. And thank you, Sophia. You know, you're a gem and you're so clever, and I love talking to you. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so cool.
So we'll say our goodbyes with Sophia. Is this your favorite song? I feel like it is. This is I'm Breaking Down from Falsettos by the Broadway legend Stephanie J. Block, the Tony Award winner. And the last note, Sophia, what are they? The only thing that's breaking up is my family, but me, I'm breaking down. The high belt at the end, she does in the show, but with a banana in her mouth, like a chewed up banana.
As she should.
So if you haven't seen that, go watch it in the Pro Shot or on YouTube. It's there's nothing like it. She's a force of nature, if not Mother Nature herself. So have a great day. Stay inspired. This is Bitchin' About Broadway. I'll see you again soon. Or hear you again soon. Or you'll hear me again soon. Thank you so much, Sophia. This is I'm Breaking Down by the Tony winner, Stephanie J. Block, and Broadway icon. Thank you so much for listening. Bye, guys. Mwah. Thank you.
on a throne, to have a country I could call my own, and a king who's lusty and requires a fling with a female thing. Great, men will be men. Let me turn on the gas. I caught them in the den with Marvin grabbing Whizzer's ass. Oh, sure, I'm sure he did his best. I mean, he meant to be what he was not. The things he was are things which I forgot. He's a queen, I'm a queen. Where is my crown? I'm breaking down. I'm breaking down. My life is shitty and my kid seems like an idiot to me. I mean, that's sick. I mean, he's great. It's me who is the madder, talking madder than the maddest tatter. If I repeat one more word, I swear I'll lose my brain. Ow. What else should I explain? Oh, yes, it's true. I can cry on cue, but so can you. I'm breaking down. I'm breaking down, down, down. You ask me, is it fun to cry over nothing? It is. I'm breaking down. Now let's consider what I might do next. I hate admitting I've become perplexed. I'm bereaved. I've cried, I've shook, I've yelled, I've heaved. I have been deceived. As enemies go, Whizzer is not so bad. It's just he's so damn happy that it makes me so damn mad. I wanna hate him, but I really can't. It's like a nightmare how this all proceeds. I hope that Whizzer don't fulfill his needs. Don't is wrong, sing along. What was the noun? I'm breaking down. I'm breaking down. I'll soon redecorate these stalls. I'd like some padding on the walls and also pills. I wanna sleep. Sure, things are probably worsen, but it's not like I'm some healthy person. I've rethought my talks with Marv, and one fact does emerge. Oh, I think I like his shrink, so that is why I might turn to drink. I'm on the brink of breaking down. I'm breaking down, down, down. I only want to love a man who can love me, or like me, or help me. Marvin was never mine. He took his meetings in the boys' latrine. I used to cry, he'd make a scene. I'd rather die than dry clean Marvin's wedding gown. I'm breaking down. I'm breaking down. It's so upsetting when I found that what's rectangular is round. I mean, it stinks. I mean, he's queer. And me, I'm just a freak who needs it maybe every other week. I've rethought the fun we've had, and one fact does emerge. I've played the foolish clown, the almost virgin who sings this dirge is on the verge of breaking down. I'm breaking down, down, down. The only thing that's breaking up is my family.